definition of like a good compromise. Probably though, they're both kind of distorting reality, because the real winners, I would say, are the next potentially dead civilians in a conflict where there's no long-term mutually preferred future being on the table. The people who win the most are the people who aren't dying this week because of these groups of people who are vying for power in the region. Almost 400,000 Syrians have been displaced this year during a similar political crisis and the violence that ensues afterwards. And this is a little bit of a contrast, but it's still ordinary. Americans, we still go to the movies. Yesterday, the new Twilight film grossed $43 million. Yesterday, Skyfall grossed $36 million. Yesterday, Lincoln grossed $25 million. And Rise of the Guardians, God bless, Santa Claus with tattoos, $24 million yesterday. Now, I only got to see Skyfall and Lincoln this week, but I didn't go yesterday. That's what we're doing too, you know, while this is happening. On a completely different note, it's inspiring to me how much money Americans can mobilize when they have something that we put our hearts into. And this, there are those numbers, you know, are national figures about, like, you know, grossing sales and all that stuff, of course. But don't you see a similar potential when you just see people being into something and mobilizing those kind of resources as a potential for what we could even do if we are mobilizing portions of our money together to do the common work? Most of our American counterparts this week had Wednesday, which I found out five times that day, is the biggest drinking night of the year. And I was like, I thought the first person told me that, I was like, you're making that up. And then like five other people told me it that day. And we're like, well, where are you going tonight? I was like, I'm probably going to be at my house, you know, if I can help it. And by the time it gets to Sunday, I don't even remember where I was on Wednesday. That's how long ago it was. But, we're doing that stuff. We're having the biggest drinking night of the year. We're watching Wreck-It Ralph. We're eating copious amounts of potatoes and gravy. And we're making room in our busy lives, our sick lives, to spend. Black Friday deals at Sears, Walmart, and Target started at 8 o'clock on Thanksgiving. Black Friday started at 8 o'clock at night the day before. You get that, right? Did that rub you the wrong way at all? Or did you just kind of be like, oh, cool, Sears. Whatever happened to Robux? You know, that's every time I think of Sears, that's, you know, it's just like, oh, poor little Sears. Didn't get your Robux no more. So far this year, according to CNN, Americans have spent $52.4 billion on what is no longer called Thanksgiving weekend. It's now called Black Friday weekend, which begins on Thanksgiving, and it's still going. So if you're bummed out now because you're like, 52.4 billion, and you didn't get to get into that, you got time. You know, Black Friday weekend continues for a few more hours, and then it gets into tomorrow's holiday, of course, which is Cyber Monday. See, we're all so into the current events, you know? We understand how this is working. This is very ordinary. That's normal stuff. As much as I feel like when that kind of stuff starts happening, I feel like crawling into a hole for a few weeks. However, I was inspired by how many people in our little podunky boutique church here in Philadelphia and around were striving for deeper meaning all the time, not just in their relationships, but even the crap that they post on the internet and the ways that they're, what the stuff they're doing together, the things that the cells are talking about. It's inspiring because it's different than all that. You know, taking a step out of that ordinary stuff, however small that might seem, is an extraordinary thing. It's extraordinary. And so many of you are doing that kinds of stuff, and I just think it's wonderful. Bucking the consumer trends, trying to make family, love, and Christ, the author of family and love, more central to our feasting and making space for people to come together with gratitude. And you heard a bunch of those stories earlier tonight even. We're in the midst of a rather intense mapping process where we're deciding where to put our focus next year. Being us and doing what we're given to do in this moment of ordinariness is our moment. something wonderful with Jesus. And that's, I want to do two long readings, and both of these people here are going to point this out for us. The first one, Willis, I need your help here. This is going to, we're not going to communicate well about this, but you, Willis and I have known each other since something like July of 1997. We have some kind of bond, and now we're about to put it to the test. Over the past few weeks, we've used this Maya Angelou poem to get us started. I'm going to read it in its entirety for us. It's going to take about 4 minutes, which is like super long, to listen to the droning of my voice. But listen as you're able, and Willis is going to offer some slides that highlight just a one little line there, and this is where we're going to test our nonverbal communication, I guess. But she was reading this, of course, when she wrote it for the United Nations 50th anniversary celebration, where she was really kind of bringing them out of their own Black Friday weekend, 6-day weekend mentality or whatever it is. 17, starting with verse 20. Once, having been asked by the Pharisees when the kingdom of God would come, Jesus replied, the coming of the kingdom of God is not something that can be observed, nor will people say, here it is, or that was my British accent, because British people are wondering too, or there it is, because the kingdom of God is in your midst. Then he said to his disciples, the time is coming when you will long to see one of the days of the Son of Man, but you will not see it. People will tell you, there he is, or here he is. Do not go running off after them, for the Son of Man in his day will be like the lightning, which flashes and lights up the sky from one end to the other. But first he must suffer many things and be rejected by this generation. Just as it was in the days of Noah, so also it will be in the days of the Son of Man. People were eating, drinking, marrying, and being given in marriage up to the day Noah entered the ark. Then the flood came and destroyed them all. It was the same in the days of Lot. People were eating and drinking, buying and selling, planting and building. But in the day Lot left Sodom, fire and sulfur rained down from heaven and destroyed them all. It will be just like this on the day the Son of Man is revealed. On that day, no one who is on the housetop with possessions inside should go down to get them. Likewise, no one in the field should go back for anything. Remember Lot's wife. Whoever tries to keep their life will lose it. And whoever loses their life will preserve it. I tell you, on that night, two people will be in bed. One will be taken and the other left. Two women will be grinding grain together. One will be taken and the other left. Where, Lord? They asked. He replied, where there is a dead body, there the vultures will gather. Now, for some of us, we have to kind of deconstruct the Kirk Cameron left behind kind of lens, you know, where this is like the passage where all of the sort of rapture enthusiasts kind of draw most of their inspiration from. And I think if you do that, you miss the biggest things that Jesus is saying here. The three in particular he's talking about. Where, how do you find the kingdom of God? And it being among the people he's talking to. That's central to the whole thing. The other part is if you try to save your life, you're going to lose it. And if you die, then you'll find your life. Anything that's not going with those two things, in terms of your interpretation, is going to be a little weird. And the last line, too, sounds kind of strange. You know, where there's a dead body, there the vultures will gather. We'll get into that in a minute. The kingdom of God is not something that we enter. It's something that the Spirit births through us. We actualize when we stop looking around for who else is going to lead the way to get out of this sinking ship. Quit waiting for the government to solve especially succeed in a way that everybody understands this was a clear victory for Jesus and for you. Forget it. It's going to be a little bit more like the convoluted thing in Gaza. You have to die to that expectation, or to the expectation that you're going to do it right. You have to let go of normal if you want to truly live with Jesus. This is his whole deal here on the second big point, the one that we had in the big letters. You have to let go of the ordinary to hang on to Jesus if you really want to find life. So be encouraged to try to take a step in that direction or to help somebody else take a step. It doesn't have to all just happen right away, or you don't have to just deal with other people's, you know, impressions of how you're doing. I don't think the people dying in this passage are the ones who are being, you know, the ones who aren't dying aren't the ones who are, how can I rephrase this? The people who are dying in this passage seem like the ones who are stuck, and somebody else is being whooshed off into outer space where they could be with Jesus. I don't think that that's the point Jesus is trying to make. I think it makes a good film, a good book. I could be wrong about the interpretation, but what I think Jesus is talking about this time is actually about the people who are not the winners or the people who are being left. Some people are being taken. That's the same word used in like five different major translations of the Bible. Being taken seems to me they're being taken by something that isn't with him. To remain and to die seems more what Jesus is into anyway. When Jesus says that the vultures or the eagles will swarm around a dead body, he's pointing to his own dead body. He's not saying, I'm going to be whooshed away first, then you're going to be whooshed away. First he's going to go and he's going to get tortured and he's going to physically die. Like, that's like kind of weird. And that's like Jesus' whole thing is, well, yeah, if you want to live, you have to die first. And now I'm going to go die. And you're like, cool, we don't have to die, right? You know, we're to be whooshed away like magic, right? And not die. Because dying sucks. Nobody wants to do that. You're not going to do that. Wait, why are you doing that? You know, Jesus messes with it every time. And he's going to put it in the front of their face and they're going to say, no, that's not what you're talking about. And he says, people who are going to cling on to their life and cling on to the normal stuff are missing it. And the people who are going to let go and die to that stuff are going to rise. And I'm going to be the first one to go and do it. And the vultures are going to let you know where it happens, because it's happening with my stinky corpse. It's like, ooh. It's weird when you talk about Jesus like a stinky corpse, right? You don't like that. I'm sorry. I'm trying to really nail this point, though. Those who truly